Broadcasting to New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Sydney, London, and around the world, this is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live on 101.3 KPCG and online at kpcg.fm. Coming up on this weekend edition, a look at the headlines at thetrumpet.com, also a brand new Key of David program this weekend. We'll take a look at that. Also, do you want to have more money? I think everybody probably does. I don't know anybody that doesn't. Great financial information on today's program that can help you with getting your finances in order. A great booklet we're going to talk about from thetrumpet.com. That and more on this edition of Trumpet Radio Live.
This is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live on 101.3 KPCG and online at kpcg.fm. Live link at thetrumpet.com as well. Lots of places you can listen. And if you'd like to follow us online on Twitter, you can do that at kpcgfm. Any comments you have, please send those to comments at kpcg.fm. Dwight Falk, Grant Turgeon here today on this edition of Trumpet Radio Live. Into our third, fourth, fifth day, whatever it is, beautiful weather in a row, 86 degrees, I think, something like that today. A little warmer over the weekend. And then if you were to believe the extended forecast, which I never do because they're always wrong, not always, but they're talking about dropping down into the 70s next week. I mean, it's autumn, I guess, here in September.
Yeah, quite a time for that to happen, too, with the Labor Day weekend coming up and people trying to enjoy the outdoors more than usual, I'm sure. So good times to get outside and do some things that usually you can't throughout the week.
Usually it's a lot hotter this time of year here, so we're really blessed with some great weather. Of course, Houston, they're still recovering from their the hurricane that came through there. We've got some information on that in a little bit. And then for those that are watching the weather, there's another storm brewing in the Atlantic. They're saying potentially it could be a Category 5 storm. And it's, I think, still another 5 to 7 days away from, you know, getting into areas that might affect the U.S. They have the projected model now, and it could go a lot of different places, all the way from, like, say, the Carolinas to could even slip into the Gulf. They just don't know what these storms will do. So anyway, it has all the makings for being another major storm, so people are really keeping their eye on that.
And it's important to note that Hurricane Harvey was only a Category 4, and then that was even downgraded to just a tropical storm, I guess it's called. And this one is supposed to be a Category 5, even bigger.
Yeah. I wonder how high they can get. Is that the highest? Do you know?
I think it might be. I think it is.
Until they come up with a new one.
Right.
Because, like, with Harvey, you remember they had to change the colors on their radar to depict the rainfall because it was historic rainfall. I was watching Fox News the other night, and they were talking about the flooding there in Houston. And the one lady said, it's like a biblical flood. She's like, you expect to see Noah's Ark coming around the corner. And everyone just kind of laughed, and then they proceeded on with their conversation. But, I mean, a historic flooding there. So we're not out of the hurricane season yet.
Yeah, wasn't it two darker shades of purple that they had to put on the map just to show that the rain really was biblical? And it's a perfect analogy to be made there, except for the fact that people don't seem to take it seriously.
Yeah, that was the thing that struck me about it, I guess. The two things. One was that I thought it was a good thing to bring up, but then the fact that people just kind of, you know, snicker at it or wink at it a little bit. Top story today at thetrumpet.com. Make sure you stop and check out thetrumpet.com. Is Russia about to invade Belarus? Could Belarus be the next Crimea? I guess we haven't thought a lot about Russia lately, if you're just looking at the headlines on various news sites, other than maybe, say, the idea of collusion with the current president. But Russia has been very active in recent years. There's been a lot about that on thetrumpet.com. And if you're thinking to yourself, where is Belarus? Well, it's right there on the border with Russia, very close, right above Ukraine. So that gives you some idea of where they are. And Russia keeps wanting to push their way further and further to the west and regain some of that territory that they've lost a little bit of influence in the last few decades.
you know that a lot of those former Soviet satellite nations probably don't want anything to do with going back into Russia's orbit, but that seems to be what is happening. Russia is getting more aggressive, but they're doing it in a more tactical, under-the-radar type of approach. It's pretty smart because a lot of people aren't paying attention to it. There was some outrage about Crimea, but now there's so many distractions that Russia is choosing a pretty good time to do this again.
Yeah, you know, if you look at the history of pre-World War II, Hitler marched his troops into the Rhineland there and then a few other areas, obviously, and took over some places. And every historian will tell you that if anybody would have stood up to him right away, Britain primarily, but even France, they could have stopped him. But nobody wanted to do anything, and he gained in his confidence and then went on from there, of course, at a higher rate of speed than what, say, Russia's up to. But again, I mean, could Russia have been stopped and been pushed back here in the last few years and said, no, you're not going to come into the Ukraine. No, you're not coming into Georgia. Probably so, pretty easily. But nobody wants to do anything about it.
That's true. You could definitely see why they would want to expand. They feel like there's a big threat from Europe and even some things in the Middle East they don't like. But the more of a buffer zone they have between their own country and these volatile regions to their west, it's probably in their own best interest. And yet at the same time, if anyone were decisive about them not being allowed to do this, they probably wouldn't be able to. I mean, they have a pretty rough economy. There are a lot of ways you could impose sanctions or at least isolate them economically around the world. But and maybe people just don't want to take direct action. It seems like Mr. Trump has been being pretty direct toward them. We'll see if that continues.
Yeah, in words anyway, which is it's a start, but who knows, maybe something else will happen there. I always feel bad for the people that live in some of those in-between areas, Ukraine, Belarus, different areas like that, Poland. They've got powers on either side that are very aggressive, and they usually get caught up in one side of it or the other. And they're just kind of in that zone between two big rivals, being Russia and Germany primarily. So it's kind of a strange spot to be in. I suppose they take pride in their independence, but the reality is they're always between these two huge powers.
They probably deep down would prefer being more involved with the European Union and Germany than they would with Russia, but it's difficult for them to choose to go too far to either side. It, depending on just how those nations would react, they don't really know what would happen to them if they upset either one of those sides.
Well, and the U.S. has been the policeman of the world since World War II, and you can't really trust what the U.S. will do anymore. So they don't really have that support. And then with Germany right now, of course, they're kind of in flux, and I don't know that they would trust Angela Merkel. I suppose they would trust Putin more, maybe not trust him, but he definitely is has power and control, and you figure he'll be around for a while. So really interesting story there at thetrumpet.com. Could Belarus be the next Crimea? Also related to that, resurrection of the First Guards Tank Army and the prophesied Prince of Russia, which is a really important write-up there. Make sure you do check those out at thetrumpet.com. Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Make sure you listen for that this weekend as well. Topic today, a few things. One, German media is very negative towards President Trump and really the conservative, I guess, element of the U.S. Mr. Gutenberg, who is on the rise there in Germany, he really doesn't like President Trump. President Trump has upset everybody. From what I've read, the more established, say, Republican Party didn't like the fact that he pretty much booted them to the side. And then, of course, the radical left doesn't like him either. So he really is kind of in a tough spot.
That's true, and Germany wouldn't like him because they gave the Charlemagne Prize to Bill Clinton, and so when Mr. Trump topples Bill Clinton's wife in the presidential election, they're probably upset about that. They're probably upset that America's not going to be handing over nations to Germany like they used to, like with the Balkans. There's some things like that that kind of make you think, well, maybe it's a good thing if certain nations don't like us as much, because maybe it means we're not doing them as many ridiculous favors.
Yeah, there was a story that Stephen Floyd mentions there on the program. There's some political cartoons, I guess, and in one case, I think they were sort of mocking Texas because of the storm and saying something about, you know, the Nazis which is, if you're writing from over in Europe or in Germany, you probably don't want to reference that, I would think. But they did, and then there was a counter right up to that where somebody was saying, giving a historical background, saying actually the real Nazis were, I think it might have been a cartoon in Charlie Hebdo actually, but they said, you know, the real Nazis actually attacked the real French. And the real Texans actually helped defeat the real Nazis. So if we're going to, you know, start throwing out some of these very negative stereotypes, you might want to get your historical facts right.
Yeah, there clearly isn't a whole lot of understanding about really America in general coming from Europe. A lot of their political cartoons, beyond just, they go beyond humor to just being extremely disrespectful, especially right now. I don't think they were doing that nearly as much when Barack Obama was the president. But the thing is, they just can't stand this president for some reason, and they're magnifying different forces in the country like neo-Nazis, which really, there's fewer than 8,000 of them. And that's coming from the Southern Poverty Law Center, which would right. definitely magnify that number if they possibly could.
And they're getting sued by multiple groups, the Southern Poverty Law Center.
They are a hate group themselves.
They're about to become the real impoverished center because everyone's suing them because they put out a list of these hate groups, and people were stunned in some cases to see themselves on the list. They threw all kinds of people on the list, and then CNN, I think it was, put it on television, and some of those groups said, "What? What are you talking about?" And then so now you got some lawsuits coming back. And CNN, of course, said, "Hey, we're just reporting what the Southern Poverty Law Center said." So anyway, they may be more impoverished here in the near future.
Yeah, that's right. It seems like every single conservative Christian group that the Southern Poverty Law Center learns about goes on the list. That's really what happens. If you disagree with homosexual marriage, you're going to be on the list. That's how it works. It doesn't have anything to do with if they're actually perpetrating hate.
Yeah, so that's an interesting development here in the U.S. One other story that was mentioned that's very interesting on the Trump Daily Radio Show was there's this festival, if you want to call it that, going on, the Burning Man Festival. And it's a lot of debauchery and going on out there in the desert. And a lightning strike sparked a massive wildfire closing the road. So for a few hours anyway, people couldn't get in and out, I guess, if they wanted to. It's on I think, federal land where they hold this. So there's one main road, and it's not traveled a lot normally, but during this festival, I think about 70,000 people go out for that thing. And so anyway, if you know much about that festival, it is debauchery to the highest levels there, I guess. And it was just interesting that there was lightning that came out of the sky and set the road on fire. I don't know. People might want to stop and think about that for a second.
Where did you say that is?
That's out in, I forget where it is, near California. I don't think it's okay. In California, but I think it's right across the border there.
Yeah, it should make people think, possibly. But, of course, it's easy to attribute a lot of things to coincidence that maybe aren't coincidence. It's sad to see that we have festivals that are really just rank hedonism and paganism, but that's just the case, I guess.
Yeah, it's really an interesting thing that goes on out there. So I guess it's some sort of it gets back to some sort of like sun worship or something, or some sort of a deal like that. It's Black Rock Desert that's in Nevada there, okay. So it's right across from the. You caught me off guard. I haven't been there ever.
Well, at first I didn't even know the country. It would have helped if you said America, too.
Oh, okay, I gotcha.
I missed even that part of it.
I gotcha, yeah. No, I didn't say America. I just threw that out there on assumption that people would be familiar. I read an article a while ago, actually, about this, I think it's like a thrift store or used clothing store out in New York City. And they couldn't figure out why people were coming in there and buying like the craziest stuff. And they're like, why were people buying this? And always at the same time during the year. And then they realized people were going out to this Burning Man festival because they put on these crazy costumes. And so now they actually, you know, recognize that, and it's like a special sale they put on. They're like, hey, you know, that's great. But they thought, why would people buy these crazy clothes? And they're making costumes to go out to this party.
Yeah, that's a business opportunity for any type of business that could create a sale like that. I don't think most businesses are considering the moral implications. They're just thinking about profits.
No, it's quite an ordeal out there. So anyway, that was kind of interesting. That was one of the stories brought up on the Trumpet Daily Radio Show today. Also, make sure this weekend you listen for the Kia David program. It's here on KPCG. The video's online at thetrumpet.com, and of course it'll be on television as well. And the title is The Little Book, and the description of the program is this. God revealed the truth about the little book discussed in Revelation thousands of years ago to the Apostle John, but God also told John not to write it down So this little book has been kept a secret until this end time. You can learn a lot more about that at this Key of David program here at thetrumpet.com. Also, the audio here on kpcg.fm, and of course, watch it on television this weekend as well. You can find the television log and listing there at thetrumpet.com if you're unsure of where to catch that. So lots of great programming this weekend. Also, the Trumpet Hour Weekend Review program comes your way this weekend. So, and watch Jerusalem with Brent Octagle. I think that's everything. I think I got it all in there for the most part.
And it's all coming up just over the weekend.
It is. That's right.
We have quite a lively station.
Yeah. And it's it is commercial free, by the way.
That's right.
That's something people, stations like to sometimes brag about, a commercial free hour. But usually it's because they can't sell any commercials. So that's not a good thing. But we're not using commercials. So you have that benefit as well. We want to talk today about a really interesting topic for a lot of people. And that is the topic of money. Everybody needs a little bit of money, and probably a lot of money, I guess. Life's expensive. You know that, Grant. You just had a child, you had a little daughter, and you know, it costs a little bit to have the child right away, but then as they get older, they want more things, and they eat more too, by the way.
That's definitely true. Obviously, the diapers are like $35 a month, which I actually never even considered that part of it, but that's just how it is now. And of course, to get the fancy stroller / carriage that my wife wanted was almost $200, and I just thought, why can't we get one of those, you know, those like fold up plastic ones that have like a little piece of fabric that you throw the baby into in the middle? And it's just, apparently that's just unacceptable.
It's not the same, because if you're taking the big walk in the park and you have bumpy terrain, you need those bigger tires.
That would be just catastrophic for a 2-month-old.
Yeah,
bouncing around like that.
Yep. Yeah, you do need it. I think they're called the jogging strollers or something to that effect. There's some like that. So I know, I've been there, and it is interesting when those expenses come up in life. And so people are always trying to deal with money situations. We have a great booklet we want to talk to you about today. It's free at thetrumpet.com. We're going to go through some of the highlights of it. Solve Your Money Troubles. In case you haven't noticed, there's a lot of money troubles in the world, especially in the U.S. Related to recent events, this is a headline from NBC News. First water, then red ink. The cost of recovery when most are uninsured. Talking about the catastrophic flooding in Houston. They say the nightmare of Hurricane Harvey's deluge of Houston could be exacerbated by the cost of recovery. Experts say the unique nature of Harvey's devastation means affected residents and FEMA's already broke flood insurance plan will be the ones reaching into their pockets to rebuild. Texas Governor Greg Abbott said recently his state could need upwards of $125 billion from the federal government to help it recover. That's a fair bit of money, and the federal government doesn't have any money either.
That's true. We're over $20 trillion in debt now, so to think that $125 billion needs to go to Texas, it does make you wonder where it all comes from. Obviously, one of the solutions has been to continue printing money, but at some point, that just really causes problems as well. Of course, you need to help in a situation like this, though. It's tough whenever, like you said, so many people aren't insured. I could sympathize with that decision to not have insurance, because it is frustrating to pay so much money per month when you don't think anything bad is going to happen.
Yeah, and it's just a lot of money. They say the last report I saw, I think there's about 100,000 homes or so that I think need to probably be redone, torn down. And if, I don't know, if you just are conservative on that and say maybe 3 people per house, you know, 300,000 people, and it's probably more than that. That's a lot of tough situations. And, you know, you watch the news, and Houston kind of gets out of the news cycle in a few days. Those people still have the rest of their lives to deal with. They have to come back from, you know, shelters, wherever they are, and now pick up the pieces. And so it's quite a gruesome situation coming back into that. They say, this article says, a preliminary analysis by catastrophe modeling firm RMS estimates that wind, storm surge, and flood damage could collectively total between $70 and $90 billion. Moody's Analytics puts the estimate this week at between $45 billion and $65 billion in damages to homes, businesses, and public infrastructure. And according to the chief economist, Mark Zandi, said, I'm sure that's going to go higher, but that's our current estimate. And he added that the figure does not include up to an additional $10 billion in lost economic output. Massive amount of money. And here's the kicker. While most comprehensive car insurance policies cover flood damage as a rule, homeowner policies don't cover water damage resulting from floods. If wind shears off a roof and rain pours in, the damage is typically covered, but overflowing rivers or reservoirs or storm surges are not. So it comes down to how did your house get flooded, whether or not you're covered. And that's going to be the tricky thing.
And see, that's a thing that a lot of people don't like about insurance companies, that they can help you out in one area but not in another area. There was a commercial about how you'd be covered in a zombie apocalypse, but not if your car hit an animal or something. So it just does bring out the stereotype that a lot of people have of these companies. I'm sure it's in their own best interest, but it's definitely not in the best interest of the people paying for the insurance.
Yeah, so it's going to be an interesting thing for those people, and of course, and they have to guard against insurance fraud and all kinds of problems. So there's a big issue there with Houston, just as an example of some of the money difficulties in the U.S. Another example is the economic problem and personal problem in terms of debt and abusing credit. And that's probably the biggest issue. Obviously, a natural disaster is a major issue as well. But if you just look at the general lifestyle in the United States, probably the biggest issue we have collectively and individually is debt. And that's what we want to talk about today. Do you have trouble with credit cards? This is a write-up here from this book, Solve Your Money Troubles. Do you have trouble with credit cards? If so, you are not alone. You have lots of friends. An example is given of this couple, David and Lisa. They both have university degrees. They both earn decent salaries, and they both recently turned 31. Their problem is that they also have $40,000 in credit card debt. That's a fair bit. Their story is all the more tragic considering that after 7 years of marriage, they still haven't made a dent in the bill. In fact, it keeps growing. If you have an experience with credit card debt and so forth, you know that the interest is quite high and you can keep paying on them. But if you just make your minimum payments, you're never really going to get anywhere.
And Dave Ramsey has a really good segment about people who call you about credit card debt and how the longer you take to pay it, the more aggressive they can get. I've never had that experience, but it does sound like it's a pretty miserable situation. Getting those types of phone calls and getting yelled at, and then, of course, the debt is just getting higher and higher and higher. And of course, financial troubles are the biggest problems in relationships in the first place. But just consider getting into that much debt and how much of a problem it could be.
Yeah, it is a real problem. There's a write-up here from CNBC.com related to this, just some numbers. And by the way, at the end, we do have some solutions we're going to talk about too. So this isn't all that depressing. But in the beginning, it's a little depressing. They say Americans owe a lot in credit card debt, more than $1 trillion. It's not just all one person, thankfully. That's greater than the GDP of all but 15 countries. So you talk about, man, the debt load. That's amazing. When it comes to individual households, the average American family owes $8,377 in credit card debt. So that's a fair bit, and add it all together, like they say, it's more than $1 trillion for the nation, just credit card debt.
Those things actually make me really happy that I don't have a credit card. For some reason, for me personally, it is literally the hardest thing in my life trying to get one. I just can't figure it out. I've tried like 10 different times. It doesn't ever work, but maybe that's why it's not working for me.
Well, once you get going with those, they don't stop. They keep on coming. They'll send them to you even if you don't want them. They have a chart here in this CNBC article about the average credit card debt per household, and it's on an upward trend. It jumped 6% in the past year. And is now as high as it was during the Great Recession. I think this was talked about on, that might have been the Trumpet Daily a few days ago as well, that, you know, after the Great Recession, people said, oh boy, you know, you can get into financial trouble, going to tighten the belt a little bit and try to get out of some of the debts, which they did for a while. But I guess because things have relaxed a little, time has gone on, credit has been cheap, it's climbed back up again with the credit card debt levels.
Well, that's the thing with it. It does become a trap because so many companies are really good at talking about how you can come in and put down $1 on a car, take it off the lot that day, and it's yours. And then, of course, you just have to pay off the other $30,000 of it at some point. And that's the part that is conveniently always left out of the commercials. It's always so enticing to get into those situations, but then once you're in it, and you can't get out of it until that money is all paid off. Oftentimes, in those situations, you're not just paying the amount of the car, you're paying interest on it as well. And so it ends up being like $50,000 eventually if you were just getting a $30,000 car.
Yeah, it gets quite expensive, of course, to try to get the economy growing. They have offered a lot of auto loans and other things at low interest rates to get people buying again. And I think there's been success with that, but the reality is there, you do have to make those payments. Another massive one, you think credit card debt's high, how about student loans? This is from studentloanhero.com. I don't know why they call themselves heroes, because they have bad information, negative information. They say, you've probably heard the statistics, Americans owe over $1.4 trillion in student loan debt. So it's about a trillion credit card debt. This is a $1.4 trillion in student loan debt spread out among 44 million borrowers. So it's less borrowers, higher debt, so you can understand that the individual bill would be higher. The average class of 2016 graduate has $37,172 in student loan debt. How would you like that? Congratulations on your accomplishment. Here's the bill.
Well, that's the foundation of sand that all those students are having to build their lives on after they come out of college. That's just the worst possible way you could ever start life, and yet they don't even have a job yet. They're looking for a job as well. They have to try to find stability, settle down, get a house, get a car, get a spouse, have children, all those things while you have just a mountain of debt on top of your head.
Yeah, it's very typical. It's just people don't want to wait to jump into the American dream, as they call it, or they used to call it anyway. And, you know, you got to get your house, get your car, get all your things going, and not maybe waiting. We'll put in a plug here for Armstrong College, where we are broadcasting from, the campus of Herbert W. Armstrong College. The way it's set up here is where if students do their part and there's a student work program they're involved in, you graduate with no debt. You can actually get some money at graduation. Now, I mean, you could abuse the system and have to pay something, but for the most part, people leave with no debt or actually get something when they're done with it. And you start out with a good education and no huge bill hanging over your head.
Right. I went through that experience 4 years myself, and it really does help a lot not to have that extra burden, because it does take away happiness. I could imagine just being miserable with all that debt over my head right now if I'd gone somewhere else for college. It does make you wonder, because the way that we pay it off here on this campus is through the student work program. Students work 20 hours a week when classes are in session, 40 hours a week when it's not. Wouldn't more colleges have possibly thought of something like that if they really had their students' best interest in mind? If they thought, well, maybe we shouldn't send them out of college with huge piles of debt hanging over them. Maybe we could find jobs for them on campus for them to do, instead of hiring outside companies to do the landscaping, to do the cleaning of all the buildings and such. Well, the students could do it, and that could pay off their tuition. But also, colleges know that they get subsidies if they make it way too expensive for anyone to afford. That's why education is just so overpriced. It's actually profitable for these colleges to make their tuition cost something like $50,000 a year.
Yeah, very high costs. And then there are some, I mean, if people are really diligent when they go to school, there are people that can graduate without much debt, but it's so, they just hand it to you. It's so easy to get it and think, well, you know, I just need to focus on my education, so I don't want to do the other things right now, and I'll take care of the paying it back later. I know people that I've talked to and worked with over the years that have had student loan debts from other universities. You know, one guy in particular, I remember he said, you know, they just gave you the money. It was so easy. And he used part of it for schooling, but then he bought a car. You know, it's easy to just either make a bigger purchase or just say, yeah, I'm not going to work. I'm just going to focus on school and having a good time and whatever. and then have this big bill. And so he was regretting the fact that he had wasted the money in some ways. He got his degree, but he spent way more than he needed to, and now he had to pay it back.
Well, don't a lot of these colleges actually have tables set up to greet the incoming freshmen, and they just hand out credit cards and any type of loan that the kid could imagine? And so they're 18 years old. They're getting dropped off by their parents. They're about to live on their own for the first time. And then all of a sudden, the first thing they see is just every opportunity of what they think at the time is free money, but they don't realize they'll be saddled with it for decades.
Yeah, it's quite expensive. And if you get a higher degree, obviously there's more debt. Combined undergraduate and graduate debt by degree. If you get an MBA, on average you have $42,000 in debt. Master of Education, $50,879 in debt. Master of Science, $50,400 in debt. Master of Arts, $58,539. If you go into law, $140,616. And the big daddy, Medicine and Health Sciences, $161,772 in debt. You get paid a lot, I guess, for your doctor, but you have to pay back a lot of debt, too.
Yeah, and this book that we have, Solve Your Financial Troubles, it's actually, it brings out how you could be making a ton of money, but even if you're making $100,000, most people feel like they should be making $200,000 to pay for all the things they want to do. And so even in a case like that where the doctors are making tons of money, they also feel like the world's open to them and they should be able to have all these luxuries because of their high salary, conveniently forgetting the fact that they have tons of debt to pay off before they get anything else.
Yeah, and as the book points out as well, especially here in the U.S., the problem isn't a lack of good income. I mean, even if somebody doesn't have, say, the best job in the world, they're probably making okay money. It's what people do with it. That's really the issue. And so we want to talk about this one chapter in particular in this book on the book again. The title is Solve Your Money Troubles, is at thetrumpet.com. And the chapter is on fleeing the debt trap, getting out of debt as best you can. I mean, that's not as easy as snapping your fingers. In some cases, you're in debt. And so you can't go, Alt-Z or Control-Z or whatever and go back. Control-Z, right?
I think so.
I work on a Mac, so I call it Apple-Z. But you know what I mean. Go backwards in time. So if you're in debt, I mean, hey, you can get out of it. If you're not in it, avoid it. That's the thing. And like you said earlier, it's so easy to spend money, but it's hard to pay it back. And that's the problem, really, with our consumer society.
Right. I mean, every single aspect of society seems to be set up that you can get things free and easy. They at least present it that way. But it's a credit trap. And you do eventually have to pay well beyond full price if you don't give all the money up front. You're going to be paying twice as much as what the item is actually worth.
Yeah, and this book says much of the financial trouble plaguing families today is not the result of low wages, as we mentioned, but it's overextending a normally adequate income for luxuries and personal indulgence is the leading cause of money problems. It's an overextending. For example, I think probably one of the biggest examples, it would be just how many people have cell phones and cell phone plans that they really can't afford and don't need. I mean, I think in this day and age, in most cases, people do need a cell phone, but they come in different shapes and sizes and expenses. USA Today has this write-up from a day or two ago. Will you need to take out a mortgage to purchase your next smartphone? They say, okay, that's an exaggeration. But with a new iPhone 8 expected to crack the $1,000 price barrier when it goes on sale in a month or two, they say it's worth asking just what kind of deep pockets buyers need to have. Indeed, the price for Apple's 10th anniversary phone could conceivably go much higher than a grand, especially if supplies are constrained. The upcoming Galaxy Note 8 that Samsung recently announced is going to be between $930 and $960, depending on the carrier that you get. And there's no word on the new LG V30 that's coming out. $1,000 for a phone. I mean, and you know how it is. Everybody's going to have one, right?
Right. I actually a couple months ago got rid of my fancy Samsung phone and got one of those old flip phones that no one has anymore. And it's actually been really nice knowing that I don't have to worry about getting a new upgrade and my phone all of a sudden is outdated in a few months. I know my phone's outdated. It's like 20 years outdated. That's how it is. And it's not going to matter to me trying to keep up with the latest upgrades. And of course, it's a time waster as well. It's not even just a matter of the money that goes into it. I kind of found out that I was probably wasting an hour or two a day at least just checking it too much. There's only calling and texting on my new phone, and I save a lot of money. So it actually ended up working out pretty well.
And the muscles you develop from flipping it up and closing it.
I do it for amazing. Fun. It makes a really loud slapping sound whenever you flip it closed.
Yeah, don't do it too close to your kid. Everyone will be like, what? What's that guy doing? It's a flip phone, folks. Yeah, sure it is.
It has actually startled her a couple times when I've done it near her.
Yeah. Oh, I bet. Yeah, but it's loud. But yeah, you see that. I mean, anywhere you go, the mall, you know, out on town, anywhere, people have phones, and you know they're expensive. And sometimes you do, you know, wonder, well, it doesn't seem like that's a person that probably is in the upper echelon of income, but yet they have, you know, everybody's got phones and the whole group does. And, you know, if you get one phone, of course, the carrier says, well, you want a few more? You get a few more lines going here. You give one to this guy, one to your kid, and so on. And so if you just look at that, I mean, it's something that probably most of us don't need. At least we don't need it, all the capabilities. I have a smartphone, and I probably use 3 or 4 functions. Yeah. And the rest of it's just there, and I don't need it or use it. And it is just an example, I think, of we're buying things in a lot of cases we don't need, or we don't need it to the extent that we're buying it. And yet the result is, not just from phones, but I mean in general, big debt here in this country.
And one thing I've actually noticed from when I used to have a smartphone and other types of purchases like that is they make it very difficult for you to actually pay for it all up front. Like, they wanted me to pay it in monthly installments for, like, you know, 2 years until I actually finally had the phone paid off. And I'm like, I have the money right here, and you're not taking it. And I don't know if it's always like that, but it does seem like they would rather have those bigger monthly payments and kind of put pressure on you to pay it off on time, or else they can cut off the service.
Well, yeah, that's a new change in the last few years, to where they you're kind of leasing your phone.
Yeah.
And that's what they want you to do. And it's easier for them to get you a new one, you know, get into a new contract and all of that. And, so it is different than what it used to be, and that's kind of the model now, to where it is hard to go in and just buy. Even if you want to just buy something, they would prefer to keep you on the hook.
So it seems like the trends in society are going definitely away from saving and building patience to get the thing that you want, to just getting it right away and always having that burdensome monthly payment, no matter what it is. There are certain things that you just don't want to have a monthly payment for if you can avoid it, and yet it's almost like it's being forced on us.
Yeah, and I was just thinking about the smartphones in general, or phones. You know, but years ago, when everyone just had a phone in their house or several phones, you would never pay that kind of money for a phone. That would be insanity, and it would be there. You'd have the same phone for probably 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea of paying all this money for a phone, it would be, I mean, what would be on it, you know? TV. I don't even know. So but now it's just commonplace, and the prices just keep going up, and I guess they'll keep going up until people balk at it. But I don't know that anyone will balk at it, because again, you're not paying the grand up front. They just pay it off over 2 years, and they just keep bleeding you dry every month.
Well, it seemed like it was really high about a year or two ago when I got one. It was like $700, and it's already gone up a few hundred for these latest models. I mean, that's pretty fast for it to go up $300, and I don't think the improvements have been that drastic.
Yeah, it's really, really amazing what's happening with that. This booklet, Solve Your Money Troubles, says, society is geared toward immediate self-gratification. And that's true. I mean, even with the phone example, I mean, if I still had my first cell phone I ever bought like 15 years ago, I bet it would still work. But, you know, you just got to get the new one. Part of it because they discontinued the other ones. But people, they say, this book says, are constantly deluged with advertising that appeals to human nature. Ads urge consumers to buy it now and pay later. Even the federal government tells people that national deficit spending is a good thing to get prosperity rolling again. You remember that after the Great Recession? We're going to spend our way out of debt. What? I wish we could all do that. That doesn't seem to make sense to me.
It's almost like the cardinal rule. If you can't put a principle into practice on a small scale, you should never do it on a large scale. So if you can't spend your way out of debt on an individual level, you should never try it on the national level. It's not possible to say, well, hey, I have $40,000 in debt, so I'm going to get myself another car payment. That just is a ridiculous notion, and yet for some reason they think that it would help nationally.
Well, yeah, I mean, I guess they probably feel like, well, if we invest it in something, that'll pay back, but it doesn't usually go that way.
There are some attractive ideas in that whole thing, but it's hard to conceptualize it.
Yeah, the underlying principles aren't right. You can't borrow your way typically to, you know, financial success. But the American economy is based on consumers, people buying things more and more and more. You know, we could probably all make do with, say, the cell phone we had 5 years ago, but then the companies wouldn't be able to keep selling you new ones. So it's our economy is really based on that in a lot of ways, and of course it's not a good system. This booklet says God knew that coveting would be such a big problem for people that he devoted one of the Big Ten Commandments to this credit-enabled, I want it now spending mentality. I think that's something we probably don't think about enough. If our mentality is we need to get it now and pay for it later, does it become a coveting issue? It's something to think about.
Yeah, it almost becomes an idol that you worship whenever it takes priority over everything else, and you're always thinking about that new gadget or whatever it is that you want. If there's no patience built through it, if there's no character built in the process, then maybe it is something to question.
Yeah, it says in this booklet, Solve Your Money Troubles at thetrumpet.com, there is nothing easy about easy credit. The Bible warns about the dangers of debt. It gives a few examples. Proverbs 22:7 says the borrower is servant to the lender, and when you borrow, you become a slave. People do not seem to understand or even consider that when you are in debt, you are just one illness, one recession, one loss of a job, one paycheck away, one huge flood, we could say, from virtual serfdom. When everything is in hock, as they say, to your creditors and in danger of repossession. And so the big tip, and there's a lot more in this booklet than just what we're talking about today, but the big tip in terms of credit problems that you could have personally would be to learn to get along without relying on credit as much as possible. And sometimes you do need it for certain things. But credit cards in particular, if you can control them, they can be a great tool, but you can't let them control you. That's the big one. If you can cut off that habitual deficit spending, you can get on the right track to getting rid of debts and saving.
And something that's really nice about this booklet, Solve Your Money Troubles, is just that it gets practical. It gives you step-by-step ways to creating a budget, to saving money, to going to drastic measures to getting out of debt if you're already into it. And of course, the point before getting out of debt is just avoiding it in the first place, which is what we're talking about, avoiding unnecessary credit. And to Mr. Morley's credit, he does actually bring out that there are certain types of credit that you can have, like maybe for a home.
Yeah, and there's of course, this is all based on biblical principles, but again, then it gets into the very practical step-by-steps as well. So that's what's really good about the booklet. And yeah, as is mentioned, it's not like it's wrong to have a credit card and use it, or it's wrong to have certain types of debt, and the Bible talks about that as well. But you have to control it. You can get out of control. And then also, God says you got to pay back what you owe. And I think we're in a society where people figure at some point, well, if it just all falls apart, whatever, you walk away. And I don't know. I mean, there might be some reasons where that could occur. But for the most part, the Bible is very clear that if you borrow it, you need to pay it back.
Yeah, and that's sort of a trend as well, as fighting back against paying what you owe, like all these lawyers that help you fight against the IRS if you owe more taxes, things like that, where the mentality as well, they did me wrong by making me pay this. And the thing is, though, no one forced anyone to make a purchase that has come back to hurt them. Maybe they made it enticing so that people would fall into the trap, but no company is able to just force you to buy a new phone or to force you not to pay taxes or whatever the case is. People think, well, that's wrong and I don't need to pay it back. That's not how it goes. We do have to pay taxes. We do have to pay off our debts. Sometimes we make poor decisions that get us into that, but we can't react to it by trying to avoid paying it back.
Right. You see movements at times. Politicians jump on this thing. Bernie Sanders jumps all over this. Is Let's just forget about student debts. Let's forget about them. And yeah, college is free and everything's free. But well, the people that have those debts, did they not agree to it? Did they not go and get the and spend it? They did, but now it's huge and they don't want to pay it back in a lot of cases. And I empathize with the fact that yeah, man, that's a pain. But he did spend it too, and there is a there is a cause for every effect. It's not fraud necessarily. You agreed to it, and now they don't want to pay it back. That's not what the Bible says.
And it's all absolutely the opposite of what we should be doing, which is taking a long time and thinking about it and considering it, all these big financial decisions, getting counsel on it. There are a lot of ways where we can make sure we understand the pros and cons of a decision before we get into it, instead of making a horrible decision, realizing it's horrible only after we've gotten ourselves stuck in it, and then trying to fight against it, which is, of course, going to cause more troubles as well.
Yeah. So, but you know, it happens sometimes. People make bad decisions and get into debt, and there are ways to get out of it. This booklet says the Bible shows that it's not wrong to borrow under certain circumstances. Luke 19:23 and Deuteronomy 28:12. If you want to look at those, but some have misunderstood. It says Romans 13:8. Paul did not forbid borrowing when there is a real need. However, he commands us to render, therefore, to all their dues, and not to owe anything to that is overdue. And so it says a person should borrow only after wise counsel and proper planning. Before making any financial decision, make sure you have counted the cost, especially when contractually binding yourself to make payments. And so it says a good rule of thumb is that if you are buying a depreciating asset, try to just not buy it until you have the money to pay for it. Mm-hmm. And most assets are depreciating. Houses maybe not, but maybe they are. It depends on where you live and what the economy's like. That's a tough one. Not a lot of people going around with, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars of cash in their pockets. But a lot of other assets do depreciate, and you're left with the bill, and you got something that doesn't have any value to it.
That's true. And that booklet also brings out, even in a case where you do have to possibly get a loan for a home, it gives principles like don't spend more than maybe about 25% on the housing part of your budget. So there are ways like that to make sure it's under control and to make sure that the monthly payments you agree to aren't too huge. It's a very specific booklet that I think it really could help anyone. I actually took a lot of correction from it just from going through it this morning. There are some things in there that they will convict you, but they also are extremely beneficial to read.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, I don't know that anybody could read any sort of financial book and say, yeah, man, I did all that. I mean, everybody's probably got their mistakes in there. But the good thing is that we can get it under control, and we can, you know, get the financial ship righted, as it were. There's some good examples in the book at the end, some encouraging ones. It says, meet Mr. and Mrs. Muldoon. The Colorado residence took 3 years, but they did it. They paid off 9 cards and $46,244 in credit card debt. They said, we changed everything to bare bones minimum. Basically, if it wasn't essential to support life, we didn't do it. And they took on some extra jobs, clipped coupons, did whatever they could do to pay off that debt, and they did it. And so, of course, that's great freedom, because debt does become a chain around your neck, to where you can't, you're slave to it all the time. You got to drag this big iron ball of debt with you everywhere you go. So when you get freed from that, then you can really start to live like people want to.
Yeah, and debt, of course, is no fun, but there can be an exciting part to facing the challenge. Instead of complaining and trying to fight what you clearly owe, there are some things where you could sit down, take a close look at expenditures, and realize, well, here's some things that I definitely didn't need to spend money on. Here's some areas where I could cut back, and I could throw all that extra money at the debt. And eventually, if you have a clear goal in mind of like a deadline when you want to pay it off, it's pretty exciting as you get closer and closer to that goal, and you stick with it. Dave Ramsey talks about, you know, getting 2 jobs and going working 80 hours a week, whatever you have to do to get out of that debt, without, you know, hurting your family or something like that. But there are some ways to conquer debt, to pay it off, and then to become free of it. That's the more fulfilling way to deal with the issue, instead of hiring a team of lawyers.
Yeah, there's a lot of websites out there that I think have some really motivational stories and some good ideas about just financial planning. You have to use wisdom, of course, and obviously we'd recommend this book, How to Solve Your Money Troubles, as the basis for what you're trying to do, and then there's other things you can look at. But there's really encouraging stories out there. It's amazing, really, what people can do when they just buckle down and do it. There's one example here. There's all kinds of it's funny, a lot of people now have blogs where that's kind of their business because they got out of debt or whatever, and people like it. So one example here, this person paid off $93,000 in debt in under 2 years, which is amazing. They said, how did you acquire $93,000 in debt? And they said it was all mortgage debt for the house that they lived in. So actually, that debt in and of itself wasn't horrible, you know, the mortgage debt. But there's a lot of examples like this where you can pay off amazing amounts of debt quickly if you really buckle down and get to it.
I've actually noticed that if you get a car payment or a house payment, sometimes you're actually encouraged not to pay off early. And it's like, well, you know, that's extra money that you could have had if you just, you know, make the monthly payment and then keep the rest of it for yourself and for your own enjoyment. But what's ultimately enjoyable is not having any more monthly payments. And so if there's any possible way to try to pay off those debts sooner, to go against the advice of whoever's telling you not to pay it off sooner.
Well, especially with a house, you're paying just so much interest. It's amazing. And so these people, they paid off that mortgage early, and they asked the question, well, how long did it take you to pay it all off? And they said, well, when we first started playing around with the table of, you know, how much it would cost to pay off their house and their budget, we figured out that it would take us about 4 years to pay it off if we increased our principal payments each month. But once we started, we got obsessed with seeing the table change month by month, that we could pay it off, you know, quicker and quicker. And they say, and so we started throwing as much money as possible toward the debt, including bonuses, gifts, tax returns, etc. And to our surprise, we knocked it out in under 2 years on one income. And then, like you said, they actually became kind of fun. And the common thread in a lot of these success stories, if it's a husband and wife, is that they got closer together. The relationship got closer because they were working towards a common goal. And that's one of the greatest things. They say, well, yeah, we love that we paid off the debt, but we also came together as sort of a team and did this together. And it helped the relationship in a lot of ways beyond just getting out of debt.
That's true, because it takes a ton of communication to figure out what the goal is, especially if some of those debts have interest. It's like the finish line is getting up and jogging away from you as you're sprinting toward it. So it is difficult to catch up. But if both sides of the couple are fully committed to catching up, it's a really exciting common goal, a common purpose that you can wake up and strive for every single day. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, one of the things they did, of course, and this is always a big, big a necessity, is they got a budget going, and they had, there's different systems. What they did was the cash envelope system, where they put the money for the month or whatever period of time it was, how much they were going to spend, you know, in each category, and they put the cash in there. Of course, you have to be careful where you keep your cash, obviously, but I think we get the point. And so if they would never spend over that, so you would not get into that, oh man, I overspent by $50. You know, they were using what was in the envelope. And then it's kind of a game, too, because if you got something left in the envelope afterwards, it's like free money. So they would take all that and pay it towards their mortgage, and they just kept doing this system and had a lot of fun with it and got out of that debt in an amazingly quick amount of time. So, and they tried to stay positive and be encouraged by reading success stories that other people had. You can look at a debt and think, I'm never going to get out of that. But you start working, start putting the principles in action that are laid out here in this book on how to solve your money troubles. Before you know it, you get that ball rolling the right way and good things happen quick.
It is a matter of just formulating a plan and sticking to it. Like, that envelope system is a great one, because then you're spending money in the form of cash instead of on a card. And the booklet also brings out how it's a psychological pain to see cash depart your wallet and go into the hands of somebody else. Not so much when it's just a card that symbolizes cash. So you spend like 10 or 15% less if you're spending with cash. And then all of a sudden, every month, you have like 10 or 15% more money, theoretically, if it works out that way for you, which it most likely will.
Yeah. This lady they're talking to here, they said, what practical tips do you have for people looking to pay off their debt? She had three tips, basically: do a budget together, make saving money a game. And then she said, consider hiding, then destroying your credit cards. She didn't want to destroy them, but she hid them and figured, like, well, I'll need them. And she said she never went back and used them again.
Wow.
So that ties right into this chapter here, solve your money troubles on fleeing the credit trap. They didn't put money on their cards anymore. Not that you can't or anything like that. It's just that for them, it was better not to. And lo and behold, they paid off their mortgage in like 2 or 3 years. Not everybody's going to be able to do that, but this is a pretty encouraging story, I think. And I think there are a lot of good principles in it.
Yeah, there are. And certainly when someone finds themselves in a situation where there is a lot of debt, getting rid of the credit cards is certainly a fantastic way to start, because that's a big reason why the debt accumulated in the first place. A lot of the time, you know, it's obviously a matter of spending money we don't have, and a credit card is the means for doing that. If we don't have them, sure enough, we're not spending more than we should, and then there's all this extra money that you can start throwing toward the debt. So maybe it's not the case that everyone should get rid of credit cards, but it certainly is a pretty good idea, at least, to think about.
Yeah, they make them. They look very nice, and they say credit, but really they should call them, like, they should just have debt written on it in big words, and like there'd be like a jail, bars from a jail, and it would be red or some color you don't love as much, like an awkward bright shining red. And then you wouldn't want to use it as much. But they look good, and they say credit, so you think maybe it's better than it is.
If only the advertising for any product would be more honest, we would actually know what we're getting into.
Right. Yeah, when you go to the store, you actually have to handcuff it to your wrists. So people, last little bit here from this booklet, Solve Your Money Troubles. Analyze your recent purchases and your present possessions. How many of them do you really need? Are they absolutely necessary for the health and welfare of your family? Are they a genuine help in serving God and His work, which is another big consideration? You need to answer these questions for yourself so you can have a happy, healthy, prosperous, bill collector-free future of financial freedom. And so no matter where you find yourself in this process, starting out or maybe got some debt, there's a way out of it, and you can be free financially. That's an exciting thing to think about.
It really is, and that's definitely going through this booklet is a source of renewed motivation for me to get back into those principles.
Check it out. It's freebookofthetrumpet.com, How to Solve Your Money Troubles. Make sure you get that. It's a free one, so you won't go into debt getting it, that's for sure. You can find it at the trumpet.com. That's all the time we have for today on Trumpet Radio Live. Make sure you listen for the New Key of David program, the Trumpet Daily Radio Show, and the Trumpet Hour Week in Review coming up this weekend for myself, Dwight Falk, and Grant Turchin. Have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you next week.
You're listening to Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG.